Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who don't really like politics. They don't necessarily follow it religiously every day, but they know they need to keep up. If that sounds a bit like you, and you just want someone to strip it all back, make it easy to understand, preferably avoid making it utterly dreary, then this is your podcast. And I promise that even if you haven't watched the news in ages, you'll follow everything I have to say and come away really informed. So if that sounds good, hit subscribe or follow if you're listening on Spotify. It's free. It really helps me out. And it means you'll never miss an episode. I'm Julia Bell. I'm recording from my new flat, rented, not bought. And I've got a new podcast set up. I'm not happy with it. So it's a bit of a trial and error process. And the people upstairs, I've discovered, are particularly heavy-footed. I've timed this at a time where I think they've gone out. I think I heard their door open and close. So hopefully I can get this done before they come back, because they are stompers. So if you hear that, I apologise. I've got to kind of trial and error work out a new podcast setup. But today we're going to talk about this ridiculously controversial bill that has been going through the motions in Parliament this week. It's officially called the Police, Crime, Sentencing and Courts Bill. And as it sounds, it's absolutely huge. It doesn't just cover one area. It covers loads, and you can probably deduce what it covers from the name. But generally speaking, it's all about toughening up on crime. So bigger emphasis on policing, giving the police more power, tough policies on the criminal justice system, lengthening prison sentences. It's a kind of classic conservative style bill, and it's one that the Conservative Party leader, our Prime Minister Boris Johnson, is particularly proud of.
Today in the House of Commons there's a debate beginning and a vote tomorrow on new measures that the government is bringing in for tougher sentences for rapists, for ending early release for serious sexual and violent offenders, and new measures to tackle domestic violence. So I hope those will go through.
That was Boris Johnson promoting this policing bill. Let's just call it the policing bill because it's got such a long title. Incidentally, he wasn't wearing a lab coat today. He was wearing a... Because you know how every interview at the moment, he's just always wearing a lab coat. It's something that I pointed out the other week. And loads of you have just been messaging me every time you see him in some novelty scientific apparel. This week, the theme is obviously building sites or kind of roadworks, because he was in high-vis a lot for these clips. So he was in a high-vis jacket for that one. But something that he missed off that really riled up his biggest critics is that this bill also has some really, let's say harsh for now, it has some harsh approaches to what our protest rights will be. And that aspect of it, I mean, the whole bill is actually really divisive, but the protest aspect of it is the one that seems to have created the most aggressive debate. So what does it actually say? What makes it so controversial? And the big question that we've got to keep asking when it comes to this politics stuff is, how will it physically affect our day-to-day lives if/when this bill passes into law? So that's what I'm going to look into for you today. And let's get into it. Now, just to warn you, this topic has a lot of layers to it. It's not just us talking about a standard bill that MPs are all bickering about in any normal week. I'm very sensitive to the timing of this being particularly painful. The death of Sarah Everard, or Sarah Everard's murder is what we should be saying. It's struck something in all of us, hasn't it? It's ignited this national conversation about what do we do about ensuring that women feel and are safe when they're alone. This can't carry on the way that it is. That's the national feeling. And the government's stance on this and their response to it is very much, right, how do we make women feel safer? We toughen up on crime. And that's what this bill does. It isn't technically indirect response to the Sarah Everard tragedy. Bills take a long time to write up and research and plan. So something of this size couldn't really have been started and finished in the matter of the last week or so. But the Conservatives are saying, look, toughening up on crime was part of our manifesto in the 2019 election. So you voted for this. And these are plans that we've had in motion since then, since 2019, if not before. But again, because of the timing of it, I'm very conscious of scrutinising any politician or any cause that politicises a tragic event, the government have got to very carefully toe the line between responding to a horrendous event and saying we've got to do better, we've got to find ways to stop that from ever happening, and then talking about it in a way that furthers their political agenda. So with a bill that is all about policing and criminal sentences for violent crimes and things like that, I think it's just desperately uncomfortable, and I suppose it's a bit of a trigger warning, if anything, for you to just be aware of that while I'm talking about it. All right, let's cover off this bill and what it actually says. Now, as it stands, and I'm recording this on Wednesday the 17th of March, the bill has passed after its second reading, and that was on Tuesday the 16th of March, so yesterday from when I'm recording this. And it passed with 359 yeses and 263 noes. That doesn't mean it's law yet. Getting a bill passed into law is a long process of back and forth between the House of Lords and the House of Commons, and they all kind of pick it apart, debate it, amend it. But it's shooting through the system pretty seamlessly. And the likelihood very much is that this bill is going to become law soon. To be honest, while the Conservative Party have such a comfortable majority in the House of Commons, it's just a fact of life that they'll probably get their way every time they want to do something. Bills only need a simple majority to pass. Remember that. So they only need one more than half of all the MPs in Parliament to vote in favour of it, and that's it. Doesn't need to be two-thirds or three-quarters or anything like that. So even if all the MPs from every other party vote against it, it'll still pass. Now, what does it say? That's the big thing. What's actually in it? It's massive. Let me just give you four or five of the big headlines, and then we'll talk about the protest stuff after and really delve into that. So it changes the rules on sentencing, and it basically means that criminals who have done serious crimes will end up in jail for longer. So toughens up on jail time, and a big portion of that is that it allows judges to jail child murderers for their whole lives. So that's an option to them now. You don't need to, you know, give them a set of years. Your prison sentence is just until you die. It's got a section about if you assault an emergency service worker, it doubles your maximum sentence. I think at the moment, if you're charged for low-level assault on an emergency worker, your sentence can go up to about a year. It'll be 2 years with this bill. There's a section on terrorism. It basically allows authorities to more closely monitor anyone who's been convicted of terrorism and has left prison. So if you're charged with terrorism, even if you do your time and leave prison, doesn't mean we're going to take our eyes off you anytime soon. And then finally, there's this bit about adults in positions of trust. And the definition of that is just adults within the community who look after our children. So teachers while the children are at school, doctors while they're in hospital. And by law, if you are an adult in a position of trust like that, you can't have a sexual relationship with that child, even if it's of consenting age. So even if it's 16 or 17, doesn't matter. If it's under your care, you can't have any kind of sexual relationship. That would be considered a sexual offence. But this bill is kind of addressing a loophole in the current law, which doesn't include adults in sport. So like gymnastics coaches or football coaches or whatever. These are adults who are in positions of trust in the same way as like a teacher or a doctor. And the likes of the NSPCC have pointed to over 160 examples of adults in positions of trust within the sporting community having sexual relationships with teenagers who are technically of consenting age, but who are still under their care. So this bill will change the sexual offences law to widen the definition of adults in positions of trust, effectively closing that loophole and making sure that, you know, sports coaches having sex with 16 and 17 year olds who are meant to be in their care will not, for whatever reason, be legal. I didn't know that was a thing until I read up on this bill. So that is one thing that's kind of covered in depth and will be a law if this is passed. So that gives you an idea. I told you it's very varied, but it is pretty much all about toughening up on crime. And it's Priti Patel's baby. She's the Home Secretary. This is her jam. She's all about that. She's like a classic, I would say, conservative politician. She showed us that already with her approach to, well, she showed us it in a lot of ways, but with her approach to immigration, her policy was effectively close the fucking borders and install this points-based immigration system where people basically have to have ticked off a very tough set of criteria in order to get in. You can't just come here with hopes of achieving your dreams. You have to pretty much already have a job in place or be highly qualified and, you know, be in a vocation that is in demand here. So very contrasting to the sort of liberal approach. You know how, like, if it's a spectrum, you've got conservative on one side, liberal on the other, and a very kind of left-wingy liberal type person would be much more all about open borders when it comes to immigration, and let's not give tough sentences, and let's not be harsh on punishment, let's focus on rehabilitation. Let's not put people in jail for possession of weed, let's decriminalise weed. And just implement learning programs. So that's like the anti-Priti Patel stance. And listen, you don't have to declare loyalty to one side of that spectrum and then just blindly follow it in every walk of life. Why not go against what social media demands of you and actually add some nuance into your political opinions? Cherry pick aspects of, for instance, this policing bill that you think have merit. And then scrutinise other bits. You know, one of these days I'd love to go on a date with somebody and for them to say, do you know what? I don't know about that, but I'm not going to let my echo chamber on social media tell me how to feel. I'm going to conduct myself rationally and apply a nuanced approach. Oh my God, I would just say marry me there and then. Someone put it on a t-shirt and send it to me. But as I say, Priti Patel is firmly, squarely on the conservative side of this debate, and she's setting the agenda. And the thing about that that slightly concerns me is that when you watch her talk about this bill, which she clearly is really passionate about, she sort of admonishes any opposition politician who tries to challenge it. And she sort of makes out like, oh, if you don't agree with this, you're on the wrong side of the argument. Have a listen.
The Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill will end the halfway release of those convicted for sexual offences such as rape. Instead, under our law, vile criminals responsible for these terrible crimes will spend at least two-thirds of their time behind bars. Our new law will extend the scope of the Sexual Offences Act 2003 with regards to the abuse of positions of trust, something which predominantly affects young girls. And it will introduce Kay's Law, which will encourage the police to impose pre-charge bail with appropriate conditions where necessary and proportionate to do so, which we hope will provide reassurance and additional protection for alleged victims in high harm cases like domestic abuse. I note the opposition will today be voting against these crucial measures. Against measures to support victims of violent crimes, including young women and girls.
So that was Priti Patel taking questions in the House of Commons on the 15th of March. And do you know what I mean about the bit at the end there where she said something along the lines of, I note that the opposition, i.e. the Labour Party and the SNP and all the parties that hate the Tories, I note that you'll be voting against these crucial measures to support victims of violent crimes. And you think, hang on, is that just you saying, if you don't support this bill, you don't support victims of violent crimes? I think that approach is dangerous. It doesn't allow nuance. I'm obsessed with nuance, but I find it more divisive than it needs be at this time, which is this hypersensitive time. And those opposition politicians might, you know, they might really like particular aspects of the bill. For instance, the closing the loophole for adults in positions of trust thing. They might love that, but because it's so massive and it covers so much stuff, they might not want to vote for it for other reasons, but she's sort of branding them as, oh, you didn't vote for my bill? Well, then you don't support the safety of women and girls. It's just a bit of a troubling approach. I get that it's politically expedient. I mean, the most famous example of it was when George W. Bush, his response to 9/11, you probably remember, he said, every nation has a decision to make. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists.
Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists.
So you couldn't interpret that speech any other way. It was, if you don't support me and the direction I take with this, then you're with Al-Qaeda. I mean, if you're another nation watching on, he puts you in a bind, doesn't he? It's very politically clever, because how do you get support quickly? You say, you either go with me or you're a terrorist sympathizer. And Patel is, without being dramatic, she is employing the same technique. If you don't support this bill, you don't care about victims of violence. It's effective, but it creates a false dilemma. It's as if there's only two very binary answers to a complicated question, and it leaves no room for a rational, accountable, and yes, nuanced approach. And I find that very troubling. I'm digressing massively. I've kind of lost track entirely of what I'm meant to be speaking about. Oh yeah, the big reason we haven't got to it yet, why a lot of opposition MPs will not be supporting this bill, is its outlook on protest. So let's spend a whole section just looking at that in a lot more depth. Okay, so this policing bill with the stuff about protests, it effectively beefs up the police's power and it strips down the public's freedom to protest. To be honest, that's the crux of it. And there's loads of things that feed into that. And I'll talk about the specifics because some of them are kind of terrifying. As it stands, the way the law currently works is if the police feel that they want to restrict a protest, they have to provide evidence that the protest would have resulted in serious public disorder, serious damage to a property, serious disruption of the community. So they have to say, like, there's a reason that we're restricting this. They have a bit more power when it comes to marches, so they can actually say, look, you can't go this route because it's hard for us to monitor or it's dangerous or whatever. They can also say, listen, you can only do it between these times. They've got a bit more power when it comes to like protests that move. But what this bill does is it gives the police power to be able to put conditions on static protests. So the police will essentially have as many powers on static protests as they do on marches and then some. They'd also, and this is one bit that is controversial particularly, they'd be given power to set noise limits. So, you know, when you go to or when you see a protest, I imagine lots of you will have attended them for various reasons. Fundamental human right, by the way, good for you. They usually are filled with people who are blowing horns, banging drums, chanting. The sophisticated ones, you have a big stage set up with people who address the crowd. They have sound systems. It's a noisy thing most of the time to protest. But in theory, according to this bill, if the police go up to people who they perceive to be too noisy and those people refuse to stop making noise, they can personally get fines of up to $2,500. But it goes on. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So according to this bill, it will also be a crime if you don't follow protest rules that you ought to have known. So there's no requirement that the police prove that they gave you a direct order, because that's the way it currently is. They can't just charge you for breaking the rules if you were never told what the rules were. But with this bill, it doesn't matter if you were never told them. You ought to have known. The information was available, even if you didn't see it. So, you know, you were acting illegally. And then I want to just look at the wording of it as well, because this is something that is pretty terrifying, not just to protest groups, but to general people who believe in democracy and the right to exercise your voice. It's this bit that says protesters will be outlawed from, quote, intentionally or recklessly causing public nuisance. Nuisance is such, I mean, what does that actually mean in the context of law and order to be a nuisance? Because it sounds just like, to me, it sounds just like a description of a protest, intentionally causing public nuisance. And it's just so vague that it really could mean anything, which basically is making the bill's critics look at this and go, oh my God, this is just a thinly veiled way of essentially stopping us from doing anything that the government doesn't like. That doesn't sound very democratic. Let's hear Priti Patel's sort of justification for it.
Last year, we saw XR blocking the passage of an ambulance on emergency calls, gluing themselves to train during rush hour, blocking airport runways, preventing hundreds of hardworking people from going to work. And finally, I'd like to gently remind the House that on one day last year, many people across the country were prevented from reading their morning newspapers due to the tactics of some groups, a clear attempt to limit a free and fair press. a cornerstone of our democracy and society. So this bill will give the police the powers to take a more proactive approach in tackling dangerous and disruptive protests.
Home Secretary Priti Patel there, again, from addressing the House of Commons about this bill on the 15th of March, and she's saying, look, yes, we're a democracy. We're not saying you can't exercise your right to protest. We just don't believe that you stating your political case should block other people from getting on with their lives. And she uses very emotive examples, blocking ambulances, preventing people from getting a hold of the media, which is a kind of pillar of democracy in itself. But on the other side, you have to think, hang on, blocking traffic, conducting activities that generally draw the attention of the public and the authorities, that is what a protest is. Let's play you someone from the opposite stance on this now. This is what Labour MP for Tottenham and Shadow Secretary of State for Justice David Lammy had to say about it.
Madam Deputy Speaker, instead of tackling violence against women, the government has prioritised giving the police the power to prohibit the fundamental freedoms of protest that the British public hold dear. And by giving the police this discretion to use these powers some of the time, it takes away our freedom all of the time. The government's bill targets protesters causing too much noise and says that those who cause annoyance could be jailed for up to 10 years. Madam Deputy Speaker, I'm thankful that the draconian limits on the power to protest were not in place during the great protests of the 20th century that led to real change. When the suffragists marched for the right to vote, some of them were prepared to break the law to make their point just outside the House of Commons. Does the Secretary of State believe that those women who shouted noisily should have been arrested too? Protesters marched from Jarrow in Tyneside all the way to London to demand the right to work in 1936. Does the Secretary of State think the police should have had the power to stop them before they even passed York? The anti-apartheid movement, of which I was part, marched continuously on Trafalgar Square for black and white people to be treated as equal. Does the Secretary of State seriously believe that they should have been arrested because they caused an annoyance? Throughout Britain's history, protest has been a fundamental method for the public to voice dissent. Madam Deputy Speaker, it's not only those who cause annoyance that the government thinks should be locked up for a decade. It's also those who damage statues of slave owners. Madam Deputy Speaker, unlike the government, the opposition will never condone criminal behaviour, but this government's priorities are backwards, they're upside down.
David Lammy there. He's one of those MPs that's just kind of generally quite famous. He is a Shadow Secretary of State for Justice, but like you've probably seen him before. And that clip did go quite viral because he really summarised a lot of points with a lot of passion, representing, I was going to say the liberal left, but it's not the liberal left, because people on every side of the political spectrum have been exercising their right to be a, quote, public nuisance, to make their case on multiple examples. I can think of the farthest right and the farthest left groups using very similar techniques to garner public attention for their cause. And I saw a thing being shared around on social media which said, look, if we stick to this bill and its guidelines on how to protest, it will not be protest anymore. It will just be a shit day out. Because it will be so limited. Think about it. In accordance with these rules, if you kind of really interpret them to the nth degree, protests will be laid out in police-approved spaces, out of the way of roads and infrastructure and anyone else, members of the public. They'll be silent or very quiet. They'll have set start and finish times. I don't know what about that will drive public and media attention and dominate national conversations and shake the government to its core to realise that there are issues that need to be addressed. David Lammy also talked about memorials and statues. That is mentioned in this bill. after the statue of Edward Colston was toppled in Bristol, the renowned slave trader, in the midst of the Black Lives Matter protests. This bill acknowledges that. It says if you damage memorials, you could get up to 10 years in prison. 10 years in prison. Can you imagine? Which, again, he refers to. That's higher than the minimum sentence he can get for rape. So someone, in theory, could be sent to jail on the same day for toppling a statue as someone who is going to jail for rape, and the person who raped someone could get out earlier. What the hell? What the hell? You know, I'm definitely sharing a few of my opinions on this. I think there are some aspects of this bill that deserve merit, but this protest bit worries me a lot. But again, just harking back to Priti Patel's comments where she said that thing, you know, I note that the opposition won't be voting for this and therefore they won't be supporting victims of violence. I just can't help but think, hang on, if I was an MP, I'd be weighing it all up. I'd be weighing up the crime and policing stuff against the protest stuff, and I'd be working out in my head, is this worth voting for? And remember the timing of it, that all the MPs at this time are going to have that at the forefront of their minds just a few days before this discussion in the Commons. A planned vigil in Sarah Everard's memory descended into a protest against the police who were exercising physical restrictions, and in cases violent restrictions, on the mostly women at the event. So the relationship and the public's trust in the police is highly strained at the moment, and it's highly politicised, especially because, God, I mean, this is such a complicated issue. The man on charge for Sarah Everard's murder is a Met police officer. It makes it so uncomfortable. Listen, this is, please don't take my words out of context. I'm deeply grateful for the good cops who keep us all safe, but it doesn't negate the fact that the timing of this bill is incredibly contentious. And that's the tangle that Keir Starmer's in. He's actually quite tough on crime stuff, so he's all about toughening up on rape and sexual assault charges. Because remember, he's got a background in law. He used to be the head of the Crown Prosecution, right? But his party, the Labour Party, voted at every step of the way against this bill because he doesn't think it goes about it in the right way. I'll play you a clip from Prime Minister's Questions today, which is Wednesday the 17th of March, where Keir Starmer and Boris Johnson did kind of go back and forth about that.
Does the Prime Minister agree we need urgently to look at this and to toughen sentences for rape and serious sexual violence?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if there was a bill going through the House of Commons which did exactly that? Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if there were measures to defend women and girls from violent and sex criminals? Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if there was a bill before the House to have tougher sentences for child murderers and tougher punishments for sex offenders? That, I think, would be a fine thing, Mr. Speaker. As it happens, there is such a bill before the House. I think it would be a great thing if the Right Honourable Gentleman actually had voted for it. He still has time. This bill is still before the House. He can lift his opposition. They actually voted against it, Mr. Speaker, on a three-line whip, and I think it was crazy.
Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, he mentions the bill last night. That provided for longer maximum sentences for damaging a memorial than the sentences imposed in the three cases of rape I've referred the House to. All of those sentences less than 10 years. I thank the Prime Minister. I thank the Prime Minister for providing me with the best examples of why the priorities in his bill were so wrong. And nothing in that bill would have increased the length of sentence in any of those rape cases. Nothing in that bill.
Okay, as you can imagine, they went on forever, but you can get a sense now that Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer have their clear stances on this. But that's not to say their entire parties fall in line with their beliefs. You're sort of seeing MPs from all the different parties sort of land on different positions across the spectrum. And I find that preferable. It would make me uncomfortable to have every MP blindly follow their leader and not challenge certain aspects of what they believe. For example, Theresa May. Do you remember her? I feel like it's been ages. But Theresa May, she used to be our Prime Minister in very different times. She's, of course, a diehard Conservative. She was the leader of the Conservative Party. but now she's a backbencher and she's voicing some reservations against what her current leader is doing.
I wanted to raise just one area, which I have to say has already been raised, but I do have some concerns about some of the aspects of public order provisions in this bill. I absolutely accept that the police have got certain challenges, for example, when people glue themselves to vehicles or the gates of Parliament. But freedom of speech is an important right in our democracy. Yeah, yeah. However annoying or uncomfortable sometimes that might be. And I know there will be people who will have seen scenes of protests and will have said, why isn't the government doing something? To which the answer, in many cases, may simply be because we live in a democratic, free society. So the first area I would mention is the bringing of giving police the powers to deal with static protests in the way that they have been able to deal with marches, because these have always been differentiated in the past. The second is around noise and nuisance, because some of the definitions do look quite wide, and I think I would urge the government to look at those definitions. So there are very important elements of this bill, but I would urge the government to consider carefully the need to walk a fine line between being popular and populist. Our freedoms depend on it.
There you go, Theresa May voicing her reservations about this policing bill, particularly on the topic of protest. It's been a while since we've heard from her. So there you go, a bit of nostalgia. And she's taking a nuanced approach. You'll love to see it. Thank you, Theresa, my hun. Thank you for coming. Okay, it's a sensitive issue. It's a painful issue. And in the context of this bill, it's a highly political issue, but I hope I've given you enough to go away with there. Frankly, if you understand what the bill is about and some of the key headlines from it, and you get a sense of the arguments on either side, then I've done my job. Next steps wise, it'll become law. It just will, thanks to that hefty Tory majority. Although I've gotten things wrong on this podcast before. So I said that Donald Trump would pardon his family. Now you guys are always going to remind me of that, and he didn't. But I think I'm going to be right about this one. Bits of it might be amended, because of course, like I said, there's this back and forth process, but as a whole, I think it will be approved and ratified and signed off by the Queen. And as you can imagine, that thought is resulting in mass outcry from these folks who particularly disagree with the protest elements in it. But as you can here, you know, it's this hugely varied umbrella bill that covers a lot of stuff that's all pretty controversial. Let me know your thoughts on it. I'd love to hear from you on social media. The handle is @JuliaBell_X. If you disagree with me, if you want to call me out on some stuff, just be nice, please. And actually, if you don't already follow me on social media, it's really worth doing it this week, especially on Instagram. I'll give you the handle again, @JuliaBell_X, because in the coming sort of, I don't know, week, 2 weeks, I'll be announcing a giveaway, a massive, really intense giveaway that I've put together in collaboration with Gearbox Records, who are a record label that I am obsessed with, based here in London. And we've essentially put together a giveaway that is worth thousands, like at least over £1,000. It's free to enter, it's easy to enter, and I just wanted to do something special to celebrate the 20th episode, which is upcoming after this, which is very exciting. So keep your eyes peeled for that, it's going to be epic. And if you find this podcast helpful, the best thing you can do to keep it going and to ensure that I can carry on doing it is to become a patron. You subscribe, it's the equivalent to buying me a coffee, and you get access to a ridiculous amount of exclusive content, including an exclusive hour and a half long episode of the podcast, which is all about Scottish independence. So if you want to hear the arguments either side of that debate, you want to learn a little bit about what an independent Scotland would look like, how likely that is to happen, what they would do economically and socially, and how it would differ, it's such a fucking jam-packed amazing episode. So head over to my Patreon and you can only exclusively listen on there if you become one. And that's it. If you have questions for future episodes, just send me a message on socials, and I'll speak to you in the next one. Okay, goodbye.